The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show from the Uniden America Studios. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning.
Good morning.
Reading this headline here. Hamas accepts a ceasefire proposal that wasn't offered.
Yeah. According to Hamas, we accept a proposal.
Yeah. And they were talking about the Israel and Egypt agreed to last week. Then Egypt said, okay, we'll go for this. And then Hamas said, okay, we accept that ceasefire proposal, except the things they had in there was not in the original deal to begin with.
Right.
And it was like, okay, so they just inserted. They said we agree to a ceasefire with rules that we have created that nobody else has agreed to.
Right. We agreed to what we agreed to.
Right. It's just like, and so now they did. They said you had the many people of Gaza come out. They were celebrating. Mm. Probably was used as more of a propaganda tool.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
There. But the other news is Israeli Defense Forces confirmed this morning that it has gained operational control of the Gazan side of the Rafah crossing. The IDF released a statement saying its forces began a precise counterterrorism operation, acting upon intelligence showing the area was being used for terrorist purposes. The IDF troops obtained operational control of the Gazan side of the crossing, the statement said. Intelligence gathering by the IDF and Israeli security authority prompted the operation aimed at killing Hamas terrorists and dismantling the Hamas terrorist infrastructure within specific areas of eastern Rafah. So, see if I can find it very quickly here. I just wasn't thinking about it when we were doing the story here. But the Wall Street Journal lead editorial today, one of the lead editorials, they had a number of lead editorials today, which was precisely on this issue. And, of course, as I'm going through everything and stalling here, we know that it will be the last thing in my pile.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's going to be on the bottom there.
Here it is. Why Israel must take Rafah. It's the last sanctuary for Hamas's military battalions in Gaza. That sort of ends it right there. But they said the battle for Rafah has begun in Gaza, and it's an essential part of Israel's war of self-defense against Hamas. The terrorist group's leaders have dragged out negotiations for a ceasefire for months with no intention of freeing hostages, while President Biden shielded their stronghold from attack. Now the masterminds of October 7th are learning that Mr. Biden can't protect them. Think about that. God.
Yeah. Yeah.
No amount of pressure, no decision by international forum will stop Israel from defending itself. Prime Minister Netanyahu said on Sunday, if Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone. But we know we are not alone because countless decent people around the world support our cause. The early Monday morning, Israel ordered the evacuation of eastern Rafah, directing civilians to safety. In the afternoon, Israeli tanks advanced. The plan is to evacuate and fight in the city piece by piece, swiftly moving civilians north and west without leaving Hamas free to down the people as human shields. Objections are pouring in from the usual suspects. France says displacing the civilians is a crime. Would it prefer that Israel fight among them or simply leave Hamas alone? The United Nations Refugee Agency again puts its anti-Israel ideology above the safety of Palestinian civilians. The invasion of Rafah was made necessary on October 7th when Hamas slaughtered 1,200 Israelis. At that moment, it became impossible for Israel to allow Hamas to control territory, remain in power, and plan the next massacre as a terrorist pledged. Absolutely, and any country, including the United States, would agree if we were attacked in that same way.
Yes.
Mr. Biden's decision to set himself against any move on Rafah is hard to understand, since there is no other way Israel could achieve its objectives. That's why we have no problem calling this administration and the president pro-terrorist, pro-Hamas.
Oh, yeah.
There was no other way to get the military objective done.
Nope. Nope.
It put the president on the side of Israeli defeat and Hamas victory. He now has a chance to reset and support Israel so it can finish its Hamas campaign as quickly as possible. As a senior Israeli official pointed out, the administration never supports anything we do until we do it. In October, the White House privately opposed any ground invasion of Gaza. Think about this. This is where we said they were pro this administration, this White House, this president was pro-terrorist and pro-Hamas from day one.
Yep.
But he couldn't beat public opinion.
You know, and again, allowing Iran to fund their proxies over and over again. The policy isn't going to change. Look, Israel didn't have any choice. Israel doesn't have a choice except to defend themselves. Yet the radicals of the world want you to believe that they have no right to do so.
Rafah hosts Hamas leaders, four terrorist battalions, hostages, and border crossing with Egypt, from which it controls incoming aid and smuggles in military supplies. It is crucial. It is the crucial city for the terrorist group future. Only when Rafah is in danger of falling will Hamas be ready to hand over its remaining hostages. After Israel announced a civilian evacuation on Monday, Hamas finally moved fast to submit a counteroffer. Interesting what real pressure can accomplish. Recall that after Israel blitzed Gaza City in November, Hamas released 105 hostages for a breather. Despite media reports, by Monday night, Hamas had not accepted a genuine ceasefire for hostages deal. It made its own offer that Israel end the war, which means accepting defeat. In reply, Israel's war cabinet, which includes Mr. Netanyahu's main political rival, unanimously decided to move forward in Rafah while sending negotiators to exhaust the possibility of reaching an agreement. If Mr. Biden wants a ceasefire that matters, he will support Israel and let Hamas remember what it's like to negotiate with its back to the wall. But remember, the most important thing, remember, as the Wall Street Journal puts here, the president didn't want Israel to do anything after the genocide of Jews in Israel.
Yep.
He's been pro, as we said, he's been pro-terrorist, pro-Hamas from the very beginning of this.
Yep. No way around that.
No, there isn't any way around that.
And still today, allowing Iran to fund the proxies, including Hamas, and putting a port in Gaza, and that aid will go direct. It's not humanitarian aid. It's aid directly to Hamas. And putting our armed forces in the way, in harm's way, in order to do that. How there isn't massive outrage about this. I just don't get it. It's as radical as I've seen any president.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, when you think that that from the very beginning the White House was against it, and as soon as Israel went in, remember it was the 500 members of bureaucrats inside this administration that wrote for an immediate ceasefire. It's like, what are you out of your mind? This goes way back, and then his own staff, revolted against him. He wanted the White House, that's the president, wanted Israel not to even attack back. But when they did, he couldn't win the public opinion battle. This is what he truly believes, and his White House believes: pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, pro-genocide of Jews. There's no other way you can look at it. And then as you added, there was no reason for him to reverse the sanctions that we put on Iranian oil so they couldn't get those funds to give to the proxy. Trump had shut it down.
Yep.
He brought it back. They funded the proxies. What do you think funded the invasion into Israel? With Hamas, they've attacked, I don't even know, it's got to be over 200 times they've attacked American interests, American military interest,
right.
the proxies, and then he wasn't as active as Republicans were in Congress to fund Israel and other members of the party, but he signed the bill, and so we're basically funding both sides of a war that he doesn't want Israel to win.
Right. No, he's making it impossible. He's doing everything he can to make it impossible for Israel to win this.
And then you sit back and you go, why? You go, I don't know why, but all I know is by what he's doing, he's anti-Semitic, he's pro-terrorist, he's pro-genocide of Jews. There's no other way to look at it by the actual behavior of what he has done.
He has the ability to cut Iran off right now, to put the sanctions back in place immediately. He's had it all along. He didn't have to reverse it. But he insists on them being able to fund their proxies, including Hamas.
Well, no, he doesn't have that ability just like he doesn't on the border.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I have the ability to do the opposite, but I don't have the ability to do the right thing. No, I'm actually starting to believe he doesn't have the ability. It's not within him to do the right thing. I'm starting to believe that. It's just impossible for him to do the right thing on either.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
Now through Wednesday on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. a display and celebration of modern agriculture. This annual event, organized by the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, kicked off Monday with remarks from Agriculture Department Deputy Secretary Sochil Torres Small.
When I think about precision ag, I think about it as being fundamental to confronting challenges. Whether it's taking on drought that we're increasingly starting to see in fields, whether it's driving down the cost of inputs, or whether it's collecting that data and figuring out how to produce a crop that's healthier, that's more productive, and that's going to give a higher value for our farmers.
Almost 50 organizations across the food and farm spectrum have displays of various technologies and discussion opportunities available during the three-day event, with the theme of this year's celebration as the future of food and farming. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We've been monitoring the situation. As you know, there was, expected, real bad weather and tornadoes in mm-hmm. parts of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And tornado emergency, the most dire of tornado alerts, was put in effect for parts of Oklahoma as what was described by the National Weather Service as a large and destructive tornado that caused catastrophic damage, and it was moving into the town of Barnsdall. Video from Fox Weather storm trackers show significant damage to buildings in that area. A reporter from Fox 23 in Tulsa showed video of a roof in the middle of the street and major damage to trees. He also said there was also a strong smell of natural gas in the area, and police were keeping people away from the scene. Also said that emergency crews are going house to house to see if anyone has been injured or killed by the storm. I can only imagine what this was going, what this is going to look like in the morning, the reporter said. You and I talked about this yesterday, and it was a part of a concern because that area, what was it? It was classified as what, five?
A risk level five, and right. That's the highest risk you can get. And basically, all the conditions were that, and they were, each of those conditions were very strong in nature. That they were going to be present throughout the later afternoon and then evening hours, and then it started as the afternoon started to come about, and those storms started to form, and it was apparent that a lot of that stuff was really going to pop after dark, and that becomes especially dangerous. And so you saw this; it was a multi-state outbreak. You had, of course, Oklahoma, you had Missouri, Tennessee, actually seeing some tornadoes on the ground there, and this system was, I mean. And it's not over. There are still some thunderstorms as a result of the system that has moved on further eastward, and some risk in other areas further east later this afternoon as well. But when you see a level five risk, that gets everybody's attention. And, you know, it started, I mean, that risk was not far from where we are. It's about probably an hour and a half where you got into that level five zone. So our neighbors to the north there in Oklahoma know this all too well, but it's kind of rare that it gets to a five. This is one of the great things about the technology, though. I think back to April of 1979, April 10th, 1979, in Wichita Falls, Texas,
mm-hmm.
What would be categorized as an EF5 tornado today. This thing was a mile wide at its base. Multiple tornadoes actually coming together. One major tornado going through the southwest part of town and doing so much damage. There's still, you could see remnants occasionally if you look for them. And there are signs of damage like places where houses weren't rebuilt for the longest time. I haven't been over off of Southwest Parkway in Wichita Falls in a while to look in that area. But we had a colleague at one time, and she was just a child when that happened. I was just 13 years old, and it was one of those situations. My aunt actually was in a car with all my cousins, and the car was picked up six times and set down by the tornado. And it's, you know, when you think about this catastrophic type of potential, and I think to myself, in 1979, in April, on that day, if they had forecast for, you know, severe storms, but today there's so much technology, ways to communicate, but also the technology that goes in to the prediction models of these types of situations and what's going to possibly form, these supercells that pop up, and that saves lives.
I was just on YouTube over the weekend. We had a very rainy, was it Saturday?
Yeah.
And I was look on YouTube, some of the tornado footage from last week in Nebraska and also a couple in Texas.
Oh, man.
There was the best shot I've ever seen of a tornado on the ground. And this thing wound up through the sky. In fact, the guy, the storm spotter, was like, "My God, I can't believe I'm here." He said, "I'm going to get a little closer." I'm like, "I'd be out of there."
Mm-hmm.
But he actually got what I view as the best I've ever seen of a tornado. It was going through, it was like, it wasn't hitting houses or anything. There was no debris, but it was like going through almost like a cornfield.
Right.
And you could see the spinning on the ground. It was clear on the ground.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before.
Yeah.
And it was just the most amazing thing. Terrifying at the same time. And then some of these other tornadoes and these, you know, I don't know whether it's the better zoom on the cameras or they're actually getting this close, but some of those storm chasers, with all due respect, because you probably do a valuable service for science, especially with the video.
Yeah, they do.
But you're still nuts.
Yeah. It takes a lot to get to that point for sure.
Listening to Red Eye Radio from the Uniden America Studios.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. Well, just wanted to bring this up because you and I were talking about it, which sort of ticks me off in the media is, you know, clickbaiting for stories. And you probably people have seen it that, Tom Selleck, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in a number of shows, Magnum, Blue Bloods now, that, Blue Bloods is supposed to be canceled, right?
Yeah, their final and 14th and final season is this fall.
Right, and so he's interviewed yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the interview. I saw it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, he goes, well, I'd like to keep, but I'd like to, keep working because I've got this, this ranch that I have, 60-something acres. Well,
it's like 65 acres.
65 acres of this ranch that I got that he bought mm-hmm. right after, you know, Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
And it's like, and she looks, she goes, you mean, she goes, you could lose the ranch if this doesn't continue? He goes, well, you know, it's a lot of cost and everything else. I took it as tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
I didn't take it as serious. And then everywhere you see it, Tom Selleck could lose his ranch if he doesn't continue. And I'm like, wait a minute. I think I've seen probably the average of all the net worth, all the network websites out there. He's roughly worth around $45 to $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
He's got property taxes and things like that to pay.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to pay it off because he's had it for over, 35 years. Mm-hmm. So it's the taxes on it. Was he serious or was he tongue-in-cheek? I took it as tongue-in-cheek. None in the media, not one story, have I seen said he might have been a little tongue-in-cheek on that one. It's Tom Selleck could lose his ranch.
Yeah. I think he's was more in the mode of... because he also alluded to you know, he says he's holding out hope that CBS will change their mind.
Right.
And uncancel the show. They do very well in the ratings. The problem is it's not in the right money demographic. And we've seen that before. And so when that happens, you see it, you know, it's been 14 seasons. For any show to go on for 14 seasons, that's a hit. And, you know, maybe it goes somewhere else, a cable or a streamer or something else. But I think you look at it as, you know, 65 acres in California, taxes and maintenance on that. It's going to be pretty expensive. Keep in mind, he's a conservative, and he's looking at it going, ugh, yeah, but do I really want, if I'm in retirement mode, do I cut back? Do I downsize a little bit?
Right.
You know, which right. we all would right. consider, regardless of how much land we own,
that's
what right. we own. You know, I mean, my wife and I are already talking about it, and I have no plans of retiring anytime soon. But, you know.
As long as I don't retire.
Right, exactly. So, you know, the whole idea of this whole clickbaiting thing has been going on for far too long.
Yeah, that's how I took it, that I'm not going to have this cash flow when it takes care of my property taxes so I don't have to eat into my savings.
Well, you know, they do this, and they, I guess because they have nothing else, they find the drama in something, and then they know they, well, we'll get the clicks. And it's stories like this. You know, let's take it and run with it. Okay. Calm down. He did say, you know, his... they lost a lot of the avocado orchard that he had. It's coming back, but drought takes its toll, and then the rain is bringing some of that back, he said. But, you know, it's I don't know if they consider it to be a commercial working venture or not. I don't know. I didn't get that from the interview. But certainly you would consider, he's 79. You know, you think Tom Selleck, and it's like, yeah, he looks pretty good. And you realize, Magnum P.I. Oh, my gosh, that was generations ago. And he's been on how many, had how many hit shows, you know? And he was on Friends for a while.
He was on Friends.
Yeah. You know, so he's been around for a while. He's worked a lot. So at 79, I would probably be considering whether or not I want to keep and maintain a 65-acre ranch in California. I question buying that kind of land in California to begin with, although it's probably going to turn out to be a very good investment once he sells it. He'll get a lot more than he paid for it.
Yeah,
or his estate will, you know, down the road, however long the family holds on to it.
He looked old and looked like he gained weight. Mm-hmm. And I'm going by the fact that I was a huge fan of the would be a mini series, the Jesse Stone series.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved him in that. The cinematography, the music, just everything. How they made him an extremely moody alcoholic who would simply have two drinks and still couldn't get his ex-wife out of his mind, and dealing with his psychiatrist and everything was just wonderful, and I just loved it. And so they did like six or seven of them, and everybody was hoping for another one, but I think it's the same thing. It was an older audience.
Yeah.
Even though it was a great, I just thought it was just a great, just a great, great series. But
you know, Longmire was a show on A&E and was number one.
I like Longmire.
And a great show, but same thing. All the demographics were the upper demographics, and for A&E, you've got to, you know, if you can't bring in the advertising money, then you're not going to be able to pay for. By the way, over the years, it's a growing expense because every actor is going to come back and ask for more. Every person, every director, every writer, they all come back and ask for more. And so in the case of CBS and Blue Bloods, I'm sure it became very expensive to produce. And you're still doing very well in the ratings, but is it going to be worth it for, you know, for CBS to pay for that production, or is it a losing venture eventually?
You know,
keep in mind they're part of Paramount, and Paramount right now is making a lot of changes. Their Paramount Plus streamer has been a problematic for the company since day one, and I think they made some smart moves in bringing people, creative people like Taylor Sheridan on board. But they also, in that same move, the question is, how much is a Taylor Sheridan worth? And the reports are they paid him a bunch of money to bring on, you know, to write and create some things that are hit shows on Paramount Plus, but you still have to do the math on, is it going to bring the subscribers to you? And when it does, how do you hold the subscribers between seasons? And the churn rate on streamers has been a big thing. And that's just one thing that Paramount is dealing with. I mean, it's a whole list of issues there, but it's why, you know, there's a changing of the guard there, and there could be, you know, a sale at some point or a merger, you know, at some point in the future. So
while not being obsessed with how good Jerry Seinfeld's Pop-Tart movie is, I was telling you this last week, and I saw it again over the weekend. There were some episodes on. I'm telling you, the writing in Law & Order Criminal Intent when Vincent D'Onofrio was there,
was absolutely
some of the best writing I've ever seen on TV. Yeah. His character and how they solve the crimes and his interrogations. I know he's a wacko leftist, but the writing and combined with his acting and the scenes with the police psychiatrist are some of the best written scenes I've ever seen in that kind of, you know, police investigative series. And it's like 22 years old.
Yeah.
So I'm like 2002, 2003. I never knew it existed. I mean, I knew he was on it, but I never watched it.
Right.
Me, it's like I catch everything in syndication years later and go, wow, this was great. Garrett was almost a quarter of a century ago.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Well, and, you know, it's unique that you find that creative force. You know, if you think about all of the Law and Orders and how each of them was very good, actually.
Oh, they were. Yeah, they were.
And then you think of the creator, you know, and Dick Wolf is one of those minds that you know, drives that kind of creative force. Then it becomes really the culture of that. And once those writers are there in house, and you know, you kind of, you know, okay, this is what we're doing. And I wonder how much of that is still at play, kind of, you know, responding to what Seinfeld said about, you know, how movies are made, or, you know, the fact that they're being made very differently now. I don't know, because I don't think there's this effort to find the creative mindset, to find the creative people and to put them all together in the same place at the same time. By the way, that's lightning. When that happens, it's rare and it's hard to catch it. But when you do, it becomes very creative and people love it. It goes on to, I mean, my gosh, Law and Order.
Well, if DEI has affected everything in a negative way,
yeah,
where the message, and especially in Hollywood, where the message become more important than the quality of the writing to give a story. Now, in comedy, we know it affected it. But has it affected it in drama, where, again, you needed, when you had, I mean, I watched those, The Criminal Intent. There's not a bad written show.
No.
There isn't one where you suspect they didn't know where to go with this, so they just ended it, and it really didn't make sense. Everything has a twist and a turn and a twist and a turn. And you're like, this is really incredible writing. And I saw, it was interesting, because when I saw, you know, all the members of Seinfeld together, they go, and I think it was Jason Alexander, they said, well, what makes a show? And he goes, the writing.
Yeah.
The writing's everything.
Yeah.
If the writing's not there, it doesn't matter how good the actors are. It's got to be good writing. If you got the great material, then you can tap into the great actors as they did there to produce something good. But you've got to have the writing. And if the whole Hollywood has gone woke. And you've seen the crap that they put out. I mean, the stuff that Disney has put out, it's like,
well,
everybody's like,
problem.
This isn't going to make it. It's not going to sell it.
Because everybody, because you go there and you, let's say you're going to a theater or you sit down in front of your TV, whatever. Everything now is on demand, right? Everything that we take in is entertainment. It's not surfing anymore. We seek it out. It's on demand. We go to it. So when we go to it, it's not, you know, anything else. It's us choosing something out of the entire bundle, massive, massive ball of twine that is the entertainment industry. And we select, okay, this is what we're going to sit in front of. This is what we're going to do. And then all of a sudden, 10 minutes in, you can hear the woke language or you can hear where they're going with it. And you're thinking to yourself, nope, this isn't working at all. Because it's not working to the storyline. It's not working to the characters. It's not working to the story I thought I was sitting down to watch.
It's working against it. I don't have cable or satellite. I still have roughly 300 choices every time I turn on the TV, including I have more. I have unlimited because of YouTube.
Yeah.
That I can search out exactly what I want to see that isn't made by Hollywood.
Right.
So to be able to think about it, to be able to catch fire in something like that and an audience which is looking for what it wants.
Yeah.
Whole different ballgame than it used to be when you had three networks where it's like, this is your entertainment for the night. You have three choices.
Right.
And that's what it was when we were growing up.
And this is what's on, and if you don't like it,
then
sorry. You're still probably gonna watch it. You'll watch the best of all the bad shows that are on. Man, rerun season. Like pulling teeth.
Jeez, I got to watch the Brady Bunch the last year with Robbie Rist as Cousin Oliver. You got to be kidding me.
I just watched it a few months ago. Okay, I guess I'll watch it again.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Now, our favorite headline of the day, our favorite headline for Eric and I was the headline from Fox News. New York Times editor says it's not paper's job to be Biden's campaign arm.
We'll rewrite that headline. New York Times editor doesn't know what his job is.
Of course it's been your job.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to be your job.
Are you announcing a complete 180 at the New York Times? Is that what we're hearing? Yeah.
The New York Times now wants to compete against the Washington Examiner and the Wall Street Journal editorial page.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? Can you pay me more?
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those Weekend Golf Guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.